I want to show you some images from U.S. history textbooks. Okay, this image that I, or the quotation that I showed you was from A History of Illinois. That's one way of sort of getting a little window on historians, how they think about the past. But how about, how do historians think about Native Americans in general? And how does American Indian history fit in with the history of the United States and so on? Well, one way of doing that is to just to look at textbooks, because textbooks are supposedly, you know, a little package that gives you the whole story of something together. Okay, here's one of the first best sellers of U.S. history textbooks. It's Ridpath's History of the United States, a 20th century edition, published at the end of the 19th century as a modern way to educate college students around the country. I showed this slide once at DePaul University, and I, after the lecture, was told that Mr. Ridpath had been an honored member of the DePaul faculty for many years, and that I had just trashed him, and it was a terrible thing to do. But anyway, he didn't teach at Illinois, so we can go off on him here. What's important here is the subtitle of the thing, which I wanted to have it as big as possible. Maybe you can't see it in the back, but it's Ridpath's History of the United States, The Progress of Civilization in North America from the Coming of the White Races to the Last Decades of the 19th Century. And I think it's really a remarkable statement, because this is his definition of the history of the United States. The United States is the story of progress, and that story begins with the coming of the white races, and it ends in the present. Okay, so it's this sort of upward arc. Can you hit the next slide? And this is the kind of illustration that is in the book. If you can focus it a little bit, we can see that the caption is "The Heroic Death of Custer." So this is one of the last images in the textbook. So this is you get the idea. You can fill in the blanks. This is the heroic story of progress, and it's conquest, and proud of it. Thank you. Okay. All right. So that's old, an 1899 textbook. Okay. Next slide. Here we have a textbook written in the 1980s. For thousands of centuries in which human races were evolving, forming communities, and building the beginnings of national civilizations in Africa, Asia, and Europe, the continents we know as the Americas stood empty of mankind and its works. Okay? Now, very interesting, there's almost 90 years between these two quotations. Change? Do you see any change? No? There's a kind of a modern twist here, which is kind of interesting, saying the human species was not born to the Western Hemisphere, it had to find it. And it did so in two waves of immigration. Interesting word, immigration. The first from Asia, beginning 25,000 to 40,000 years ago, and the second from Europe and Africa, beginning in the 16th century. So they're trying, it's obviously, this is a textbook to sell nationally and include African-American history and so on. What about that? What do you think about that? As a way, is that, so it's kind of modern. What about that term, the way he's, that second sentence and third sentence? Any thoughts about that? Two waves of immigration? Yeah. Well, we don't know about these dates, but we do know that there was human movement at some time in the distant past. So there may be some questions about the dates, but any thoughts about referring to both of those as immigration? Yeah.
In places the Native Americans had no greater side of land than us.
They're just, yeah, right. They're all immigrants, okay? My immigrant grandmother, starving in Sweden, they got on a boat, they came to New York, immigrants, okay? Landless, penniless, just the same as Native people. Does that hook up with any of those themes that we just talked about behind the board, the terms that I put up? You might call it racist, but what other of those themes might fit here?
Justification.
Doesn't that sound pretty, You know, we're all immigrants, you know, let's all just get along, okay? You got here a few years earlier, you know, 10, 20,000, who knows, but, you know, okay. So very interesting. We have some of the same kinds of structure here, even though it's 90 years later. Okay, and one of the best-selling textbooks in the United States is the Richard Courant textbook. Some of you may have had it in high school. Okay, next. We move on. I'm going to try to do this a little more quickly now. We move on to how textbooks view native culture. I'll move over here so I don't stand in front of people. I don't know if it's better for you or not. Okay. North American Indian tribes at the time of colonization. Okay, I'm gonna take pot shots here just to sort of make my point quickly and move on. Seminoles. Okay, at the time of colonization, meaning at the time when Europeans arrived. Okay, Seminoles are a group that evolved from the Creeks in the 18th century. Okay, Crows. I can say this. Without any of my Crow friends in the room, but the Crows did not exist as a separate group until the 17th or 18th century. Okay. Why? Well, because they had a history with another group. They broke off, formed their own cultural patterns, and so on. Same thing with the Seminoles. Navajos, a group that migrated, not clear exactly what their organization was as a group. Okay. Next slide, please. Same map, major Indian tribes, 1500, okay? We see, again, we have the Sioux west of the Missouri River. Some question about that. There was migration of the Sioux moving. We have the Seminoles still here in Florida. We have the Crows in the Yellowstone Valley, okay? What are they thinking? Any word come to mind from what you saw in the first quotation? Yeah. Stationary, okay? And why might Indian people be stationary when other people have histories and get to move and stuff? Where would that stationary bicycle idea come from, do you think? Again, there's a racial ideology, but what else? Yeah. Well, and why didn't they know? Or talk to people, okay, all right? So, and then there's this idea about Indians and nature, and Indians and the land, and Indians are part of the land, and Indians are timeless, and so on, okay? So there's this kind of stationary bicycle slash oak tree metaphor. You know, Indians have roots, they're in a place, they don't move, okay? And then think about that statement, the history of the United States from the coming of the white races to the 19th century. What's behind that? Well, what's behind that is the idea that history, movement, human change, history is something that comes from Europe. It's an import, you know? It's like shoes and, you know, handbags and stuff. It's unloaded on the ships that came across the Atlantic. That's when history starts, when the Europeans come. Otherwise, you have people who are just on their stationary bicycles in Florida and Missouri River and the Yellowstone. Okay? All right, next slide. So stationary, interesting that term comes up again. Another textbook, these are all from the 80s and 90s. I'll show you some contemporary ones in a minute. I gotta keep moving so we can do it. This was something I completely fell upon. Looking through textbooks, many textbooks have little inserts on art. And this one had a American landscape, artistic perspectives on the land. It was nice, native drawing. I thought that was terrific. But I looked, I thought it was interesting that it says Plate 1 Short Bull, Sundance. And then I turned the page, I don't have a slide of it, I turned the page and it had a famous painting of Paul Revere done in the 18th century by, I think, Benjamin West. And it said Benjamin West, and then it had little parentheses. And it said born 1720, died 1790. And then I looked and I went through and there was Jasper Johns and Thomas Aikens and they all had birth dates and death dates. I thought, well, that's funny. Short Bull didn't get to have a birthday and a death day. Maybe they didn't know. So I went and looked up to an encyclopedia of native artists and lo and behold, there was Short Bull. And where was Short Bull? What century did Short Bull paint in? He painted in the 20th century. But he gets to be Plate 1, Our Earth the Mother. Our Mother the Earth was how Indians described the land. And then it was interesting when I learned about Shorkwell, I found out that he was a rebel. Shorkwell didn't get along with the government. He had a real attitude. And he had an attitude because when he was alive in the early 20th century, the sun dance was prohibited. You go to jail if you dance the sun dance. So what is this painting? If it had a date on it, and it was painted by someone who was living on a reservation where you'd go to jail if you did the sun dance, and he painted the sun dance, well, it's not very hard to connect the dots. This is a protest sign. And this is a document to preserve something that is being eradicated or attempting to be eradicated. Okay? So there's a story here. There's a history here. It's very nice. Our Mother the Earth is a wonderful phrase. But so think about those phrases. Rude agriculture, primitive people, well, you know, they have birthdays, I guess, but they probably don't really know when their birthdays are, and, you know. You can imagine, you know, what's being said here. Okay, we were talking about this earlier about museums. What is the lesson? What is the story being told? Okay? All right, next slide. These kinds of phrases appear in textbooks, and I'll just point to it and it's obvious. Colonial history, little photographic insert, pretty pictures. The wilderness remained a threat to European civilization and a constructive challenge to creativity in a people conscious both of the simplicity of their lives and the richness of their cultural heritage. Okay? Young men like Jefferson grew up in a borderland world, looking out from Queen Anne rooms of spare elegance onto a wild, uncultivated land. Okay? Well, you've heard from archaeologists, you've read site reports, you know about Cahokia, you know this is baloney. Okay, and you can think about why that is. Okay, next slide. Lots of heroic figures in textbooks. Joseph Brandt. It does not say that when Joseph Brandt first saw the American flag, he reached for his gun and started shooting. But Joseph Brandt, heroic figure. All right, next. Little Turtle. We'll talk about Little Turtle in a couple of lectures. He is at Fallen Timbers in 1794. This scene did not take place. There was no meeting between Wayne and Little Turtle at Fallen Timbers in 1794. And this painting was painted a generation later in Chicago. Okay, but it has a message here. Heroic and losers. Huh? Okay, next. And then we have images like this. We move into the 19th century. We see buffalo hides. Next. We see dead people. This is Bigfoot at Wounded Knee. Next. And we see poor people. This is a painting called Caught in the Act, Indian stealing cattle from a white rancher. Okay, next. I think that's the end of this section. Okay, you turn that off.